You're listening to the Counter Tobacco Podcast. For this bonus episode of the podcast, following up on our episode on African American tobacco use and industry targeting, two CounterTool staff members, Jackie Boards and Rosie Leon Foote, had the opportunity to interview Dr. Philip Gardner, co-chair of the African American Tobacco Control Leadership Council, while he was in the Triangle in North Carolina for a number of speaking engagements around menthol and tobacco as a social justice issue. Dr. Gardner is a public health activist, administrator, evaluator, and researcher. Dr. Gardner received his doctorate in behavioral sciences from the University of California at Berkeley, where he focused on youth violence as a public health issue. Throughout his research career, Dr. Gardner has maintained his community activism to address racial disparities in health through writing, organizing, evaluating, and public speaking. In addition to his role with the African American Tobacco Control Leadership Council, Dr. Gardner is the Social and Behavioral Sciences and Neurosciences and Nicotine Dependence Research Administrator for the Tobacco-Related Disease Research Program, or the TRDRP, University of California Office of the President. Our apologies in advance, as the sound quality isn't the best because this interview was conducted after an event, so there is a fair amount of background noise. But we felt this was too important not to share. We hope you enjoy.
So kind of what makes tobacco a social justice issue? And I know you're going to be talking about this a little bit tomorrow during the event. But like, what makes tobacco in itself a social justice issue to you?
Specifically, tobacco industry uses what I would call predatory marketing tactics to push their products on the most vulnerable in our society, particularly African Americans, other folks of color, women, mentally ill, the LGBT community. And it's a classic case of the people who have few resources or education, being preyed upon by multi-billion dollar organizations. It's not only a social justice issue, it's a racist issue, frankly, as it relates specifically to African Americans and what they've done to them over the last 50 years. That's why it's a social justice issue to me.
Okay. Where do you feel that you're seeing the greatest successes around menthol reduction in communities?
I think where tobacco control activists have the ability to pass local ordinance restricting the sale of these products is we're actually seeing things move forward. Be appraised that a lot of these laws have only been passed in the last year or so, so there's no big data showing that this has gone down or this has gone up. But where we see advances are where people can restrict, and there's a lot of ways to restrict. Cities have passed what we call buffer zones, that you can't sell within a certain number of feet. Cities have passed where you can restrict, you can only buy at a certain place. And now what we're trying in some parts of California and in some other cities is to have places where you can't even buy in that city. So they're going to be different levels. Let me give you the most positive thing that we know of right now. In Ontario, that passed their ordinance last year, we actually have data that shows that menthol use has gone down by youth over the last year. That's data. Secondarily, in New York City, that passed flavors restrictions that didn't include menthol. In 2010, they looked at data from 2010 to 2013, and that all flavored cigarette sales and youth use of those cigarettes had gone down. I've argued with them, and they're going to try it. If we include menthol, we could get those similar results. But so we have some limited data that shows that this works. Key thing is local tobacco control activists working with national groups can actually have some impact on their community. That's what I'm saying.
Very true. Very true. So for communities working on this issue, like at Countertool, we work with a lot of different states. I think it's 21 now, and we work with a lot of different local communities, and they're trying to enact laws, and we kind of help them through that process. So what should their first steps be? Like, you know, if you could think of something that they should do it first to kind of tackle these menthol-related policies, where should they go?
First step is you have to put together a broad coalition of folks at the local level. That includes community people, clergy, youth groups. You have to get, what do you call it? If you can get unions and churches, and you have to get a broad coalition to be different in each place. The next step, though, is to identify at the city government level who's the champion. There's a lot, you know, there's 13 people on the city council, and four are progressive. But in those four, who's gonna carry the water? That becomes the question. So coalition, the actual knowing your city government, who's gonna carry the water, and then third is getting allies from the national tobacco movement, whether it's the National African American Tobacco Prevention Group that Mike works with, or my group, the African American Tobacco Control Leadership Council, getting help from CDC, getting help from Tobacco Free Kids, getting some help nationally. Build a coalition, identify a leader. This will take time. Let me just also say that. This will take a little bit more time than you think, but that's how I would initially answer.
Menthol products are highly advertised in predominantly African American areas at the point of sale, with increasing rates of youth adoption of e-cigarettes with flavors, including menthol. How do you think we can counter this issue from an individual and policy perspective?
That was one of the last questions that was asked there. From a policy perspective, so the different flavor restrictions that I've been involved with included it for electronic cigarettes also. So if you look at the restrictions in Duluth, Minnesota, Minneapolis, in St. Paul, in Berkeley, in Oakland, they not only include for cigarettes, but they include for e-cigarettes. So from a policy level, that makes sense. I think you ask a much harder question when you ask about the individual level. How do you get kids to not like flavors? And we're not going to get kids to not like flavors. What we can do, I hope, is that we can get the education about. So what I did today was for education for adults. This type of thing needs to be made for youth. And I'm not the one to do that. I run my mouth about, you know, all of this trash. But there has to be a way to show kids that this is not good for you and you shouldn't do it.
Yeah.
Part of the problem is, and this is a much larger existential problem, if you say it's just for adults, then they definitely want to do it.
Okay.
That's what I want to do. You know, they're doing what I want to do. So we have to find a new, I think we have to find a new level of argumentation, not just for adults, it's bad for adults too.
I mean, with our organization, so we work with Minnesota and we kind of help them along that process when they're passing all these, you know, flavor policies. And I think one thing that stood out to me with them is, you know, just watching the youth stand up and speak for what they believe in and say, you know, this is bad. Like, they had a very much focus on getting the youth involved. And that's what I really admired about them and their work. And I think just generally with our states, we try to advocate for getting youth involved and going to stores and seeing what's being sold and, you know, helping to collect data on that. So I think it's really important to, like you mentioned, getting youth involved and helping build that. So,
Kamos.
Yeah.
What do you think the end goal should be for menthol tobacco?
Just a deep question.
It's a good question.
We might look at it as the arc of history bends. human beings have been using drugs for a long time, and using cigarettes was a way that allowed people to get high and still be productive. It's not like alcohol. If I sat here and drank this much alcohol, I would just go do a tour and all that trash. But I could sit here and smoke a cigarette and that wouldn't happen.
Yep.
Try to move people away from substance abuse and into other uses of things, I think, is the question.
Yeah.
I think the point here is getting flavors out of poison is the way we have to put it.
Yep.
We can't be making poison taste good. And we have to be able to get that's what I think. When we will get rid of menthol and gummy bears and strawberry and all of that, it's when the underlying thing is that cigarettes kill you, and by putting flavors in them helps, what I use the term is, helps the poison go down easier.
Yep.
That's the problem. So that's what I'd like the history to be, if I could be short, but unfortunately things are moving very fast. So these IQ lessons that I talked about at the end, they already have menthol versions of them.
Okay.
And they're already selling them all around the world.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just working, you know. Anyway.
So what strategies do you see as having the best chance at reducing disparities in tobacco use and reducing the influence of the tobacco industry's targeted marketing?
Well, I think the restriction of selling flavored tobacco products in the African American community is a must. I mean, this is a 50-year thing. Even doing that would be the first step in curbing the health disparities associated with it. I'm going to step outside the box here a little, though. If there was health care for all, if people had guaranteed housing, if people were given jobs, we might not feel so oppressed.
Yes.
And then maybe we could actually be human beings and not rely on drugs so much.
Yeah.
So yes, I think we should attack the drugs specifically. At some point, we're going to have to deal with the mud hole that we find ourselves in.
Right.
And we are in a mud hole. And we've been in a mud hole. You know, I got my undergraduate degree in European history, and I got a MA in African American history, and even though I have a doctorate in public health, I'm a historian.
Okay.
This has been going on since day one.
Yep.
If we could change the world, and that's what I've spent my adult life trying to do, I think that would have an impact.
Yep.
I'd like to restrict the sale of menthol, but I'd also like people to live in decent housing
and
have it affordable and be able to use it.
Yeah, that's true. Right. Yeah.
Excuse me for fancy being myself.
And especially coming from the Bay Area, it's really, in the last couple of years, it's been housing especially.
Hey, I had to move out of Oakland.
Me too. Wow. Why do you think I'm here?
I mean, I'm a doctor. I mean, it's like...
I have a master's degree.
Wait, let me just say, damn, you know what I mean? It's like,
I have a master's degree.
It's crazy.
And I think that a lot of this is, especially when you're looking at the data correlating like marijuana use with alcohol use, like there's ways that we can say, oh, we want to get people to stop and we want to offer alternatives and we want to do these things. But at the end of the day, these are coping mechanisms, and how do you deal with the issues that are causing people to need to cope?
If you treat people like dogs long enough, some of them begin to act like dogs.
Yep.
You know, let's treat people as human beings, and maybe they'll be more human in their undertaking. They won't need to go home and get drunk all the time and be living in some cooped up.
Right. Yeah, it's like it's right. Yeah. Right. It's, you know, I think it's that stress factor, and I feel like, you know, there's so many studies that have looked at stress and how that plays into like health, and I mean just in my life, you know, just getting stressed, I mean I can just see it taking a toll, and you know, so people having to go through these stressful situations and not having housing and not having certain things, like it contributes to these patterns of tobacco use and alcohol use and everything. So
right. Well, thank you so much for that. We don't want to take up too much more of your time. Is there anything else you want to add before we get off?
I want to encourage you guys. This is not a sprint.
Mm-hmm.
This is a marathon.
So maybe this take back.
think 10, 15 years from now what you might be doing.
Yep.
It may not be tobacco. I want to encourage you for it to be tobacco. Mm-hmm. But you should be in the fight regardless of what it's about. Because it's going to be a fight. If you want to treat people as human beings, you're going to have to...
Yeah, tackle it from all...
You're going to have to, you're going to have to do something about it. Yeah. I'm leaving it there. Yeah. I already got my foot in my mouth.
Yeah, no, it's...
All right, well, I'm off the recording. Are you recording on that?
Yeah, okay.